Jerilyn Steele has the night off. Steve Thompson in on a rare Sunday night, and we're going to open with sports, but we've got politics, current events a little bit later on in the program. And in the 10 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics outside of the world of sports, and that is space. And Mike Wall is going to join me from space.com. We'll get his opinions on what's going on with that Artemis 1 rocket. They had problems. It's been delayed. Are they going to get it back on the pad? Are they going to launch this fall? And then beyond that, what's going on with SpaceX and much, much more. So that's coming up later on in the program. But at the moment, sports in the spotlight. A little later on in the hour, we're going to talk Twins. They did get a big win behind Joe Ryan. Faint playoff hopes. But they did get the win today over Cleveland. And the Twins do get it done. Joe Ryan was just brilliant pitching into the eighth. The Twins win 3-0. Final game of that five-game series coming up. It is a Monday matinee. So more on that later on in the hour. Meanwhile, the Vikings, they didn't play yet. They'll play Monday night in Philly against the Eagles. And joining us right now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, his job is to cover the Vikes for the Pioneer Press online at TwinCities.com. His name is Chris Thomason. Chris, good to visit with you.
Steve, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, good to visit with you. And let's start with the weather in Philly tomorrow night. What's it look like for game time?
Well, it's actually going to be kind of a hot one, so that'll be interesting watching. The Vikings, of course, play indoors in the climate-controlled U.S. Bank Stadium. The high is supposed to be 89 Monday, but keep in mind it's an 8:30 Eastern time start. I think the low is 68, so I would imagine it's probably going to be, I don't know, upper 70s or so or something like that when they kick it off, maybe around 80.
Yeah, so it's not like a noon or a 1 o'clock Eastern time start in Philly, so the Vikes get a bit of a break there, but the weather shouldn't be a problem. I did take a quick peek, and it looked like there was a slight chance of rain. Shouldn't be a big deal in Philly tomorrow night. Let's go back to week one. I don't know if the Vikings could have played any better in their win over Green Bay.
Yeah, you couldn't complain at all. A lot of people didn't know what to think, obviously. First game for Kevin O'Connell, the key starters were all kept out of the preseason. They didn't show anything offensively in the preseason, and all their preparation for Green Bay was done secretly behind closed doors. And, worked out quite well. I mean, you'd think maybe a little bit of a slow start with some of those starters not playing in the preseason. Not at all. The offense came out humming, 17-0 at halftime. But, you know, a real key obviously was the defense, because we've talked about it before, Steve, on how atrocious the defense was the past 2 years. I mean, obviously injuries were a factor. So taking that into account, I mean, you know, they are healthy, but they were switching to a 3-4 scheme from a three. You can't complain at all about the defense. Gave up a mere 7 points.
There was a thought, though, that they caught Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers at a good time because they didn't have their full complement of receivers. They were a little nicked up or shorthanded. But all in all, the Vikings really dominated that game. It was really never in doubt all day. And when you can beat a division rival, some would argue the favorite to win the NFC North, that is a big deal right out of the gate.
Yeah, they were without their two starting tackles. And obviously the Vikings were able to put a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. And he doesn't have the experienced wide receiver core to bail him out. And those guys are just starting to get on the same page. I mean, Rodgers didn't play at all in the preseason. At least Cousins has a lengthy history of working with all of his receivers. So that certainly was an advantage for the Vikings there, no doubt.
Chris, the injury report this week, is there anything that stands out to you?
No, not really. I mean, the Vikings, the only guy on it is Andrew Booth, and he's the rookie cornerback from Clemson, but he's pretty much just a special teams guy. So, I mean, with all due respect, I mean, he's not a significant contributor. So, yeah, the Vikings are really pretty much injury-wise in great shape.
Yeah, and going into Philly, there's been a thought, and there's been some stories done that this will be a step up, that this will be a challenge. Number one, on the road, Monday night game. I don't know if we need to revisit Kirk Cousins' overall career record on Monday nights or that sort of thing. But nevertheless, this is a different kind of challenge. And the Eagles, pretty solid team.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Brian O'Neill was talking about their defensive line, Vikings tackle, and we've got a bigger challenge than Green Bay's line. And if you look at the four starters on Philly's defensive line, every single one's been to a Pro Bowl at some point in their career. Fletcher Cox has been to six, although the defensive line for Philly actually didn't play too well. Last week they gave up 181 yards rushing to Detroit, but of course, now we're seeing these mighty Lions have this potent attack. I don't know if you saw any of today's Lions game, but the put up a stat, 35 points in three straight games going back to last season. And the last time Lions scored 35 or more points in three straight games was 1953. So that was an interesting stat. But basically, yeah, I mean, the Eagles are going to be riled up. It's nighttime. I mean, you know the crazy Philly fans. They've got a jail in the stadium. So I wouldn't be surprised if that jail is in use tomorrow.
Yeah, Lincoln Financial Field will be rocking for this Monday night game between the Vikes and the Eagles. One thing we can say about the opener, and there is a sense, and it seems to be a no-brainer, is offensively, they're going to try and get the ball to Justin Jefferson, and I think that this has been a theme, and, you know, Jefferson is already established as an elite receiver in the NFL, and, you know, trying to get him the ball and targeting him has got to be a huge part of the game plan. Now, with that said, every team the Vikings are going to face know that in that preparation that week that they're going to try and take him away.
Yeah, that was what was so crazy about the Packers game. I mean, everyone knows they're going to Justin Jefferson, and he was pretty much unguarded the entire game. It was quite a bizarre defensive scenario, though, by Green Bay. But a little bit of a subplot, which, of course, was talking about it Friday. I mean, everybody assumed that he was going to be drafted by Philadelphia in 2000 with the 21st pick. Instead, they took Jalen Reagor, now with the Vikings, of course. And Jefferson said on Friday, put up a little bulletin board material saying he's glad he wasn't drafted by Philadelphia and that he's a lot happier in Minnesota. So that's a little subplot. And then Jalen Reagor has said, to some extent, he's looking for revenge. I mean, he's not going to get many opportunities returning punts, but we'll see if he can get revenge as a punt returner, or maybe they throw him a token pass or two. He didn't play a single snap from scrimmage against the Packers.
Yeah, and that was a pretty big pickup for the Minnesota Vikings to be able to get a guy with that kind of upside to help out on punt returns. You know, it was a need they had, and, you know, who knows, this guy could become a bigger and bigger factor.
Yeah, definitely punt returns was an issue. Last year they had D.D. Westbrook, who was okay but hardly great. They actually worked him out again and offered him a contract back in June, but it wasn't to his liking. So they bypassed him, thinking that Amir Smith-Marset could be the guy, and it was kind of a semi-disaster in the preseason with him. I mean, every punt return was an adventure. He lost a fumble, muffed another. So they really had to square away the punt returner situation. And, I mean, Reagor, to be 100% honest, has been a slight disappointment as a punt returner so far in the NFL. He did have one for a touchdown as a rookie against the Packers. But they love his potential, and he did average 20.5 yards his final year at TCU in 1999. So he certainly has the ability.
So we'll see what the Vikings have for the Eagles at the Link tomorrow night. in Philly, 7:30 our time. Eagles favored by 2.5 on their home field in that one. I suppose, Chris, it's going to work out real good. You'll be able to scout the Bears and watch Packers again tonight on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I'll be scouting them tonight. And, of course, I was scouting the Mighty Lions today. And their offensive juggernaut, and they come to U.S. Bank Stadium next Sunday. So, and the crazy thing is, if Green Bay loses tonight, they'll be in sole possession of last place in the NFC North.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about the Lions, you know, everyone wrote off Jared Goff. Pretty good day today. 4 touchdowns, 256 yards through the air. You know, he had his moments with the Rams, and everybody hated the guy, and now he's getting a shot with the Lions. And the one thing you can say about the Lions, and is this his second year or third year, their new head coach? I think it's
second year of Dan Campbell. Yeah. They had the infamous Matt Patricia before him.
Yeah. So the second year, and it seems as though he's got these guys believing. You know, they play hard for him.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up an interesting point on Jared Goff. We all remember 2018 when it looked like he was really getting his feet wet after being the number one draft pick. He had a great regular season. He threw for 500-some yards against the Vikings on that Thursday night, takes them to the Super Bowl. It's like, hey, this is sure. And then the very next year, it totally went south. And it's been up and down, mostly down for him the last couple of years. But he looks like maybe he's finding a groove there in Detroit now.
All right. Well, here come the Lions next week. But Philly first on a Monday night. Chris, look forward to your coverage. Good visiting with you as always, and thanks.
Thank you.
All right. There he is, Chris Thomason, who covers the Vikings for the Pioneer Press, online at TwinCities.com, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. It'll be the Vikings and the Eagles from the link tomorrow night, 7:30 our time. Eagles favored by 2.5. When we come back, Jonathan and I will review the early games today in the NFL, talk a little bit more about the Vikes and the Eagles tomorrow night. We'll get into that in a moment here on News Talk 830-WCCO. Vikes, Eagles, tomorrow night, week two of the NFL. And, Jonathan, you ran down the scores earlier. Why don't we look at those scores again, if you've got a moment, and kind of get us up to date. By the way, Bears, Packers underway in Green Bay. Chicago 1-0, of course. Green Bay 0-1. They got beat by the Vikes here a week ago. If you don't mind, what do you got?
Thank you very much, Mr. Thompson. This is so bizarre, me doing this on a Sunday night after 7 o'clock, so this is kind of a treat for me to do this. So we'll run down the scores here on this special Steel Talking program, and we'll go through some of the games that happened today. Let's start with the early action. In New York, the Giants taking on the Carolina Panthers, and it was a tussle. It was a slugfest. No team really could get a lot of offensive traction. The Giants come out with a 19-16 victory. They are 2-0 on the season after their surprise win last week in Tennessee. The Panthers, under Baker Mayfield, fall to 0-2. In Jacksonville, the shocker of the day, the Indianapolis Colts had to fight back from a 20-3 deficit last week in Houston to force a tie, and they didn't get off to the best start. They're supposed to be one of the favorites in that division. Well, they got off to a worse start today. They could get nothing going against Jacksonville. The Jaguars shut out the Colts 24-0, get their first win on the year, drop the Colts to 0-1-1 on the season. So a real stunning game that happened. Matt Ryan was completely ineffective. Jonathan Taylor was held down to 54 yards rushing, the leading rusher last year. So that was a very big surprise going into this week. The game of the day was in Baltimore. The Ravens got off to a huge start against Miami. They got off to a 28-7 halftime lead. They led twice by 21 points. The Dolphins came back with 28 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Tua Tagovailoa, 469 yards passing, six touchdowns, six, half a dozen.
Wow.
Two of them went to Tyreek Hill, who had 190 yards receiving. Two of them went to Jaylen Waddle, who I believe had 170-plus. The Dolphins came back in the end, win it 42-38, get to 2-0 on the season. In Pittsburgh, the Steelers taking on the Patriots. New England looked bad in week one against Miami. Pittsburgh pulled out a chaotic win over the Bengals, and the Steelers could not overcome the Patriots' defense. New England uses a muffed punt late in the second half to score a touchdown that ends up being the decider. 17-14, New England gets to 1-1. Steelers fall to 1-1. In Cleveland, the Browns built a 13-point lead with basically 2 minutes to play in the fourth quarter. They had a 30-17 lead. The New York Jets go down the field, score once, recover an onside kick, score again with about 15 seconds left to play, get the extra point. Cleveland missed an extra point to go up 14 late in that fourth quarter. The Jets win 31-30, and yeah. Robert Saleh is saying, who's taking receipts now? The Jets get to 1-1. Browns fall to 1-1. In New Orleans, the Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had a – you talk about a slugfest. This was 3-3 for the longest time. Got to the fourth quarter. Something happened in that fourth quarter. Tampa and Marcus Lattimore for the New Orleans Saints defended a pass. He got into a shouting match a bit with Bruce Arians, who is not even the coach there anymore. He was on the sideline, and then Lattimore's walking away. Tom Brady has a couple words for him. Then Lattimore goes back at him. Leonard Fournette comes in for the Bucs, and then Mike Evans comes in for the Bucs and shoves down Lattimore, and a scuffle breaks out. It was a mess. That seemed to light a fire under Tampa, who went on to win 20-10. The Saints are now 1-1. Tampa Bay is 0-2. In Detroit, you talked about this before with Mr. Thomason. The Detroit Lions have scored points over the first 2 weeks. They end up outscoring the Washington Commanders and get to 1-1 the final there, 36-27. The late games in Inglewood, California, the L.A. Rams, they got off to a big lead over the Atlanta Falcons and then had to hold on for dear life. Atlanta came back to lose 31-27. The Rams get their first win on the year. The Falcons are 0-2, a game 0-2 after their first 2 weeks. The San Francisco 49ers, they rolled over the Seattle Seahawks 27-7, but they lost in the process. Trey Lance goes down with an ankle injury, had to get carted off the field. So now Jimmy Garoppolo, thank goodness he's back in the fold. He is there and playing for the 49ers, and we'll see what happens with that Lance injury as we go forward.
Well, and Jonathan, I did see a report. He has been ruled out for the year by the Niners.
And that's a huge loss for them, who are expecting to move on to the future with Trey Lance. So that signing of Jimmy Garoppolo is now huge for them. In Dallas, the Cowboys, under Cooper Rush, another backup quarterback, they end up holding off the Bengals, win with a field goal at the gun, 20-17, get to 1-1. The Bengals, the Super Bowl participants from the AFC last year, now 0-2 on the season. In Denver, it was a very sluggish game, back and forth. Defenses took over. The Broncos end up winning 16-9. They get to 1-1. Texans fall to 0-1-1. In the desert in Las Vegas, Las Vegas Raiders were trying to hold off the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray scrambles into the end zone with no time left in the fourth quarter, and they have to get a two-point conversion. They convert in the back of the end zone. A.J. Green with the reception to tie it and send it to overtime. In the OT, Arizona had to punt. The Vegas Raiders are moving down the field. Hunter Renfro fumbled the ball twice during that overtime drive. He was able to get the Raiders were able to get that first fumble and hold possession. They did not hold the second one. That was returned about 60 yards for a game-winning scoop-and-score touchdown. Arizona wins 29-23 in overtime, gets to 1-1. The Raiders fall to 0-2. Real quick, the Thursday night game, Kansas City came back from being down against the L.A. Chargers to win 27-24. The Monday night games, the Tennessee Titans will be in Buffalo to take on the Bills. That's the early of the two games. The later of the two games, your Minnesota Vikings will be on the road in Philadelphia to take on the Eagles. And just in the first quarter, about 5 minutes in. It is scoreless in Green Bay between the Packers and the Bears at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, and by the way, Bills favored by 10 in the early game on Monday night. Eagles favored by 2.5 over the Purple in the nightcap. And the one takeaway from the games today is the Dallas Cowboys, even though they lost Dak Prescott, their backup quarterback's pretty good. He came in here a year ago, beat the Purple, and helped lead the Cowboys back to a victory down there. I'm impressed.
I'm telling you, the two things I've noticed from this year so far, the first 2 weeks, there aren't many leads that are safe, number one. And number two, we're not quite sure who the best teams are. There are some teams we thought were going to be really good that have not gotten off to good starts. Cincinnati and Indianapolis have gotten off to bad starts. Miami's gotten off to a good start. The Giants are 2-0. So we've kind of turned things on the head a little bit as far as the beginning of the season. We'll see if it pans itself out, but right now it's kind of up in the air.
Well, and Cooper Rush is the one who got it done. Guy made some big throws in some big spots in that game. And once again, Dak Prescott's out for a while. He could be back mid-season. But you got to be impressed by what he did. Huge win for the Cowboys. Now the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, are 0-2 out of the gate. That was one of the big games of the day in the NFL today. That was in the late window on CBS. All right, we've got a break. We've got the weather. We'll talk Twins. They did get a win today. Is it too little, too late? Joe Ryan was terrific in the win. Final game of that series in Cleveland coming up tomorrow. We'll get into all of that with Phil Miller from the Star Tribune in minutes here at News Talk 830 WCCO. Twins did get a win today in Game 4 of the five-game series in Cleveland. Joe Ryan was terrific, and the Twins win 3-0. Problem is, they're six games out with 18 to play. One more with Cleveland tomorrow before they head for Kansas City in a three-game series with the Royals. Angels coming to town this weekend. Fan Appreciation Weekend at Target Field. And joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Phil Miller. He covers the team for the Star Tribune, online at startribune.com. And Phil, kind of a lost weekend for the Minnesota Twins, but Joe Ryan was really good today.
He was, and I guess it's you take some positive out of that, but I mean, the season ended the last couple of days. They got here four games out, looking at a kind of a mountain ahead of them to get back in the race in the final 2.5 weeks. And they made the mountain much, much bigger. It was great that that Joe Ryan could turn things around for them today. But these games have really exposed the difference between the Guardians and the Twins. The Guardians are using their best pitchers and their best lineup, and the Twins are putting out some pretty weak lineups really have – they won today, but they have not been very competitive this weekend.
Yeah, and it gets back to injuries, and you can point to everybody injured and all the games lost to injury and all of that. One of the things I brought up after the ball game on Friday night, sitting in for Henry Lake on Final Pitch, is that, yes, the injuries have had a cumulative effect, but when the Twins were leading the division and the bullpen was really struggling earlier in the summer, that was an opportunity for the Twins to get a little bit of breathing room. I know it's all hindsight, but it's more than just injuries with this ball club, with 18 to go.
It is. The injuries are part of the reason why they're here, but you're right. That is not all. They had opportunities. The series here in June was a disastrous for them, where they led every game and I think won only once. And that kind of set the tone. But so you can't blame it all on injuries. But, boy, you look at the lineups they are putting out here. You just I mean, they had a guy hitting below 200, batting fifth today. And he hit a home run, good for them. But, some of these lineups, today, Jake Cave and Gary Sanchez batting 5-6, neither one of them hitting 220. The eighth and ninth hitters are hitting below 200. It's been like that the whole series. The games, it's very strange. The first two games were non-competitive, where the Twins seemed to have no chance. They really fought back last night. I did not see a five-run rally in them, and they forced the game to 15 innings, but they just couldn't, even with the advantage of a runner on second base, they just could not score. And today they managed three runs and got a great pitching performance, but you can't count on shutouts every day.
Yeah, and you make such a good point, because I was on between games yesterday and took a sneak peek at the lineup for the nightcap. And just to recap, Miranda at first, Correa was a DH, Urshela at third, Sanchez batting cleanup, was catching, Celestino in center field. You had Gordon at second, Palacios at short, Waller in right field, and Hamilton in left last night. And, wow, you would say, hey, the Twins, in September are going to run that lineup, who would have believed that when they broke camp down in Florida?
Well, if you had said that the Twins have given up and are flying the white flag and are not even trying anymore, that's the kind of lineup that you would have had out there. And give them credit. The fight to push that to 15 innings was remarkable. And if Jermaine Palacios, again, a shortstop who's been in the big leagues a week, hadn't booted a ground ball, that game might still be going on. It felt so futile for so long. The bullpen did a nice job, and the offense, without Buxton, without Polanco, most of the guys that have carried them this season, with a Louis Arise that Rocco said today is hobbled and would be on the injured list if circumstances were different. Give them credit, they're fighting back, but the tidal wave is upon them.
Yeah, and some of the other numbers that have really stood out: record on the road since the All-Star break. You take away their record, minus the Kansas City Royals, who they've really mopped up on, and they get the Royals for three games in Kansas City, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's been a bad run for the Twins, there's no doubt.
Even with the, we get to go to Kansas City for three games, and they have to be thinking, they can't lose again, basically, six out with 16 to go. But even when you realize, the challenge eases up in Kansas City, then you are reminded that the Guardians closed the season with six consecutive games at home against the same Royals. Thanks to the lockout, the rework schedule. Yeah, they their last six games are here in Cleveland against the Royals, and the Twins are going to be trying to make up ground. I wish them well, but it has really just been striking the mismatch that this series has been, and credit to the Twins for nearly winning last night and actually winning today behind a pitcher who didn't give up a hit until the fifth inning.
Yeah, Joe Ryan's been really good. One other thing that stood out from this series, Bailey Ober came back and pitched really well on Friday. I mean, that had to be a huge positive, because in reality, the Twins have to be thinking in some ways about 2023. I think there are a lot of fans realistically have turned the page as well. Joe Ryan, very good, good pitching performance today, you'd have to say. In general, he had a couple of rough patches, the bout with COVID, et cetera, and then getting Ober back, and the idea that, okay, here's a couple of young guys that are going to be in the middle of this thing. But, you know, beyond that, I saw a number. Byron Buxton hasn't played 50% of the available games in his major league career, and that came out the other day, and it was like, wow, I knew it was about 50-50, but it's actually a little less than that.
Yeah, and, you know, it seemed like they were doing a really good job managing his workload, plenty of days off. How do you feel today? How do you feel tomorrow? You know, here we are now. He's been out nearly a month. You know, it's killing him as much as it's hurting the Twins. Ober's return was a real positive. 5 shutout innings. He had not pitched. His last game in the majors was June 1st. Full disclosure, he was my pick in spring training to be the big surprise impact this year. He was the sports writers run a pool, pick the Twin who will have the biggest year, and I thought Bailey Ober was primed for a big year. A groin injury cost him 3.5 months, and it just didn't happen. But you're right about next year. Kenta Maeda will return from Tommy John surgery. Bailey Ober will be fully healthy. They surely hope Tyler Malley will be healthy. Sonny Gray has established himself as a real front of the rotation guy. Joe Ryan has pitched 2 consecutive games where he's taken a no-hitter into the 5th inning or later. There's reason to be optimistic, but I hesitate to say that around Twins fans because they've heard it before.
Yeah, for sure. But there are lineup and roster questions going into this offseason. You know, what about Max Kepler? And, you know, they have Alex Kirilloff, but here's another guy in his big league career. He is constantly injured. Now, he had that wrist surgery, and hopefully that'll pay dividends, but we have no way of knowing. Byron Buxton's track record climbing the ladder through the minor leagues and in the major leagues, he just isn't available, and I hope that changes. So when it comes to Luis Arraez, certainly has established himself, Jose Miranda, and then, of course, the big one, what will Carlos Correa do in the offseason?
Yeah, they have 16 players on the 60-day injured list, which means that they are not on the 40-man roster. That is a thicket of players to go through and to decide who's staying and who's going. That means that they have essentially 56 players right now, and they can only have 40, and minus more if for any guys that you want to bring in. They have huge roster questions. You're right. You know, Kepler, do they give up on him? Sano, they clearly do give up on him at the price his contract calls for. All kinds of decisions up and down the lineup. Kirilloff's surgery was radical and really new for a ball player, so they have no idea what he'll be next year. It's kind of weird, but the pitching staff might be the most the part that you can count on most next year going into the spring, and we don't say that very often in Minnesota.
All right, Phil. Well, good to visit with you on this Sunday evening, and hopefully we'll talk again before the end of the season.
Okay, Steve. Good talking to you.
All right, there he is. Phil Miller covers the Twins for the Star Tribune on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. It is Steel talking here on a Sunday night. Gerilyn is away. Steve Thompson sitting in. You normally hear me on Saturdays or filling in for Henry Lake during the week here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins win. They're 6 back. The numbers are daunting. If Cleveland goes 500, 8-8 over the final 16, Twins need to go 14. Twins did get a win today in game four of the five-game series in Cleveland. Joe Ryan was terrific, and the Twins win 3-0. Problem is, they're six games out with 18 to play. One more with Cleveland tomorrow before they head for Kansas City in a three-game series with the Royals. Angels coming to town this weekend. Fan Appreciation Weekend at Target Field. And joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Phil Mellory covers the team for the Star Tribune, online at startribune.com. And Phil, kind of a lost weekend for the Minnesota Twins, but Joe Ryan was really good today.
He was, and I guess it's you take some positive out of that, but I mean, the season ended the last couple of days. They got here four games out, looking at a kind of a mountain ahead of them to get back in the race in the final 2.5 weeks. And they made the mountain much, much bigger. It was great that that Joe Ryan could turn things around for them today. But these games have really exposed the difference between the Guardians and the Twins. The Guardians are using their best pitchers and their best lineup, and the Twins are putting out some pretty weak lineups really have – they won today, but they have not been very competitive this weekend.
Yeah, and it gets back to injuries, and you can point to everybody injured and all the games lost to injury and all of that. One of the things I brought up after the ball game on Friday night, sitting in for Henry Lake on Final Pitch, is that, yes, the injuries have had a cumulative effect, but when the Twins were leading the division and the bullpen was really struggling earlier in the summer, that was an opportunity for the Twins to get a little bit of breathing room. I know it's all hindsight, but it's more than just injuries with this ball club, with 18 to go.
It is. The injuries are part of the reason why they're here, but you're right. That is not all. They had opportunities. The series here in June was a disastrous for them, where they led every game and I think won only once. And that kind of set the tone. But so you can't blame it all on injuries, but boy, you look at the lineups they are putting out here. They had a guy hitting below 200, batting fifth today, and he hit a home run, good for them. But, some of these lineups, today, Jake Cave and Gary Sanchez batting 5-6, neither one of them hitting 220. The eighth and ninth hitters are hitting below 200. It's been like that the whole series. The games, it's very strange. The first two games were non-competitive, where the Twins seemed to have no chance. They really fought back last night. I did not see a five-run rally in them, and they forced the game to 15 innings, but they just couldn't, even with the advantage of a runner on second base, they just could not score. And today they managed three runs and got a great pitching performance, but you can't count on shutouts every day.
Yeah, and you make such a good point, because I was on between games yesterday and took a sneak peek at the lineup for the nightcap. And just to recap, Miranda at first, Correa was a DH, Urshela at third, Sanchez batting cleanup, was catching, Celestino in center field. You had Gordon at second, Palacios at short, Waller in right field, and Hamilton in left last night. And wow, you would say, hey, the Twins, in September are going to run that lineup. Who would have believed that when they broke camp down in Florida?
Well, if you had said that the Twins have given up and are flying the white flag and are not even trying anymore, that's the kind of lineup that you would have had out there. And give them credit. The fight to push that to 15 innings was remarkable. And if Jermaine Palacios again, a shortstop who's been in the big leagues a week, hadn't booted a ground ball, that game might still be going on. It felt so futile. It felt so futile for so long. The bullpen did a nice job, and the offense, without Buxton, without Polanco, most of the guys that have carried them this season, with a Louis Arise that Rocco said today is hobbled and would be on the injured list if circumstances were different. Give them credit, they're fighting back, but the tidal wave is upon them.
Yeah, and some of the other numbers that have really stood out, record on the road since the All-Star break. You take away their record minus the Kansas City Royals, who they've really mopped up on, and they get the Royals for three games in Kansas City Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. You know, it's been a bad run for the Twins, there's no doubt.
Even with the, yes, we get to go to Kansas City for three games, and they have to be thinking, they can't lose again, basically, six out with 16 to go. But even when you realize, the challenge eases up in Kansas City, then you are reminded that the Guardians closed the season with six consecutive games at home against the same Royals. Thanks to the lockout, the rework schedule. Yeah, their last six games are here in Cleveland against the Royals, and the Twins are going to be trying to make up ground. I wish them well, but it has really just been striking the mismatch that this series has been, and credit to the Twins for nearly winning last night and actually winning today behind a pitcher who didn't give up a hit until the fifth inning.
Yeah, Joe Ryan's been really good. One other thing that stood out from this series, Bailey Ober came back and pitched really well on Friday. I mean, that mm-hmm. had to be a huge positive, because in reality, the Twins have to be thinking in some ways about 2023. I think there are a lot of fans realistically have turned the page as well. Joe Ryan, very good, good pitching performance today, you'd have to say. In general, he had a couple of rough patches, the bout with COVID, et cetera, and then getting Ober back and the idea that, okay, here's a couple of young guys that are going to be in the middle of this thing. But, beyond that, I saw a number. Byron Buxton hasn't played 50% of the available games in his major league career. And that came out the other day, and it was like, wow, I knew it was about 50-50, but it's actually a little less than that.
Yeah, and, it seemed like they were doing a really good job managing his workload, plenty of days off. How do you feel today? How do you feel tomorrow? Here we are now. He's been out nearly a month. It's killing him as much as it's hurting the Twins. Ober's return was a real positive. Five shutout innings. He had not pitched. His last game in the majors was June 1st. Full disclosure, he was my pick in spring training to be the big surprise impact this year. He was the sports writers run a pool, pick the twin who will have the biggest year, and I thought Bailey Ober was primed for a big year. A groin injury cost him 3.5 months, and it just didn't happen. But you're right about next year. Kenta Maeda will return from Tommy John surgery. Bailey Ober will be fully healthy. They surely hope Tyler Malley will be healthy. Sonny Gray has established himself as a real front of the rotation guy. Joe Ryan has pitched two consecutive games where he's taken a no-hitter into the fifth inning or later. There's reason to be optimistic, but I hesitate to say that around Twins fans because they've heard it before.
Yeah, for sure. But there are lineup and roster questions going into this offseason. What about Max Kepler? And you know, they have Alex Kirilloff, but here's another guy in his big league career. He was constantly injured. Now, he had that wrist surgery, and hopefully that'll pay dividends, but we have no way of knowing. Byron Buxton's track record climbing the ladder through the minor leagues and in the major leagues, he just isn't available, and I hope that changes. So when it comes to Luis Arraez, certainly has established himself, Jose Miranda, and then, of course, the big one, what will Carlos Correa do in the offseason?
Yeah, they have 16 players on the 60-day injured list, which means that they are not on the 40-man roster. That is a thicket of players to go through and to decide who's staying and who's going. That means that they have essentially 56 players right now, and they can only have 40 and minus more if for any guys that you want to bring in. They have huge roster questions. You're right. You know, Kepler, do they give up on him? Sano, they clearly do give up on him at the price his contract calls for. All kinds of decisions up and down the lineup. Kirilloff's surgery was radical and really new for a ball player, but so they have no idea what he'll be next year. It's kind of weird, but the pitching staff might be the most the part that you can count on most next year going into the spring, and we don't say that very often in Minnesota.
All right, Phil. Well, good to visit with you on this Sunday evening, and hopefully we'll talk again before the end of the season.
Okay, Steve. Good talking to you.
All right. There he is. Phil Miller covers the Twins for the Star Tribune on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. It is Steel talking here on a Sunday night. Geraldine is away. Steve Thompson sitting in. You normally hear me on Saturdays or filling in for Henry Lake during the week here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins win. They're six back. The numbers are daunting. If Cleveland goes 500, 8-8 over the final 16, Twins need to go 14-2 to tie. They'll try tomorrow in a matinee in Cleveland, final game of the series. We got to run. That Mississippi welfare scandal involving Brett Favre coming up following the news. It is Steele talking here on a Sunday night. Geraldine is away. Steve Thompson sitting in. You normally hear me on Saturdays or filling in for Henry Lake during the week here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Twins win. They're six back. The numbers are daunting. If Cleveland goes 500, 8-8 over the final 16, Twins need to go 14-2 to tie. They'll try tomorrow in a matinee in Cleveland, final game of the series. We got to run. That Mississippi welfare scandal involving Brett Favre coming up following the news.